Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 8 of This Week in the Hawks. My name is Graham, of course. Today is Friday, the 10th of February, 2017. And here we go for another one of these. Aren't you glad you came? I sure am. Anyways, let's get to the news, Hawks news this week. Let's get to a birthday, special birthday. It is Paul Millsap's 32nd birthday today. Happy birthday, Paul. You are the best. I would go insane watching this team without you, so I appreciate you, even though you'll never hear this, but hey. Let's get to the news very quick. There's nothing, no BS here to begin. No cream eggs to eat, I have a window to look out of, but there's nothing interesting to say. I still have Star Wars posters in my room. I added Episode 7 to my collection. I'm looking at it right now to my right on my desk. So, hey, that's cool. Aren't you glad I told you that? Let's get to the Hawks news. Torian Prince, we're going back a good bit here. Probably last Friday, at least. Torian Prince was signed to the D-League with the Long Island Nets for one game. It was supposed to be two games originally, but kind of with Dunleavy's kind of scary fall against the Rockets there last Thursday, it was kind of, you know, of course with Tapo Sefolosha also injured at the moment, the Hawks decided to bring Prince back a little earlier than expected. He scored 16 points in his game with the Long Island Nets. Did that come with the win? I have no idea. Things I should check beforehand. Unfortunately, Prince hasn't really seen a lot of time in Sefolosha's absence. He's down in the pecking order when it comes to the rotation wings. DeAndre Bembry has been playing the majority of minutes left over from Tim Hardaway Jr.'s place on the bench. So no love for Prince there at the moment. You get this sort of thing throughout the season with the rookies. Sometimes Prince has played, sometimes Bembry has played, and we just seem to be in the phase where Bembry is just playing at the moment. It's set to continue. It looks like it'll be interesting to see how they handle the rookies once Sefolosha is back in the lineup. But that could be a little while yet. Other news: Lamar Patterson signed to a second 10-day contract there on, I believe it was Wednesday or Tuesday, one of those days. Good Lord. things I also should have checked. I have a stuff written down here, I just didn't write down the date, but it's all in the week. So Lamar Patterson is signed for their 10-day contract. He's only featured in three games so far, averaging 2 points, 1.3 rebounds. Hasn't had a whole lot of time to showcase himself, but when he has, you could argue that he hasn't made the most of that opportunity. I'm quite worried for Lamar because I think the Hawks are going to like having an extra roster spot when you get closer to the trade deadline, but more so the buyout season after the deadline happens. I think the Hawks will want to be players for the players that become available in buyout season, and I'm afraid Lamar Patterson might get himself cut here after this 10-day. I hope not, but we'll have to see. I just think the Hawks will like having. We'll want that flexibility as such in that roster spot that they can actually take someone on to help them in the playoff run. But we shall see. Hopefully Lamar can stick around. I'm a big fan of Lamar's game. I'm hoping he sticks around. But I guess it's not really his decision. Hawks also this week, they've been missing Tapo Sefolosha quite a bit. He's missed the last six games now with a left groin strain. I kind of wrote on hawksoup.com about how important he is and kind of just basically all the stats. And if you like stats, you should check out that. I don't like self-promoting, but you can check out that piece. The Hawks have been a lot worse defensively without Tabo, as you could probably imagine, but I just kind of outline how extensive that kind of is. And the Hawks on Monday and then again on Wednesday, Bud kind of saying that they're probably changing the course when it comes to Sefolosha's rehab. I'm going to read a quote here. It's from Monday before the Jazz game, and it's from Bud. I think we're probably just going to give him a few days, maybe change course a little bit as far as how much he does during the day, trying to ramp him up and get him ready. Maybe just back off and see if complete changes and see if that can get him back healthy and ready sooner. So this is never the thing you want to really hear. when it comes to rehab is when you have to change course. It's never encouraging, really. But Bud also had a very brief update on Thiago's splitter, which we'll get to a little bit later as well. We'll talk about splitter later, but just to read Bud's quote here. He's doing more in the shoot-arounds and more in the practices. I don't know that I'd necessarily take it and say that he's getting closer, though, but he's doing more. We'll get to splitter later, but for Thabo, so that was on Monday before the Jazz game, and then again on Wednesday. So speaking before the Nuggets game, Bud said every game or every day we were ramping him up and seeing if he could be ready and if he would be available. I think we're backing off and how much we ramp him up. Maybe let's take a few days and a few games and see if the less workload and less ramp up can get him to where he is ready to go shortly. I would say, so Ocampo was asked maybe if Thabo could play again before the All-Star break, and Bud had to say to this, I would say we are hopeful of him playing before the All-Star break, but that's obviously on the back burner. If we have to go that long, then you have to do that 7 to 10 day break to add on to it. So it seems, I would say it's unlikely that Cephalosha will probably feature before the All-Star break. Just give him, you know, if he misses these next three games before the break, it'll be 9 games that he's missed in total. Plus then you've got 10 days or so to rest. He should be good to go, but look, it's going to be, we'll have to see. I'd be surprised if he played a game before this stretch ends. Maybe a game, but I would definitely say that he will not play 3 games, that's for sure. But we'll have to see with Thabo. It's a little concerning, and the Hawks have been definitely hurting without him. Again, you can expand on this more on hawkshoop.com. You can check that out. Some other news, not so much news, but a kind of chatter. Trade season is coming to an end soon. The deadline is sometime after the All-Star break. Research is great, and I don't do enough, apparently. I have notes written down here, and I've got a few pages, and it's only when you get into it do you realize what you're actually missing. But the trade deadline is coming up. And Kevin Pelton of ESPN wrote a piece with the 5 deadline deals that he'd like to see. And he featured, of course, Paul Millsap in here. And a trade with the Toronto Raptors. And this is all hypothetical, of course. None of this is anything. But this hypothetical trade would involve Millsap going to the Raptors and the Hawks receiving Terrence Ross, Jared Sullinger, rookie Jakob Poeltl, the Clippers' first-round protected pick this season, and the Raptors' first-round pick. That's quite an interesting deal, if that were ever to present itself, because that's a lot of assets for possibly a few months of Paul Millsap. I would have done that deal last month. I wouldn't have done it this month. But just interesting kind of chatter going on around the league. We haven't really heard a lot of trade talk since it was kind of announced, not announced, but, you know, reports kind of came up that the Hawks had yanked Millsap from the trading block. We haven't really heard a whole lot else come from the Hawks since, and that was a good while ago. You'd imagine that's there's a good reason behind that. So I'd be surprised if they made moves involving Millsap and Cephalosha now at this stage. But interesting to see here the chatter in the league. It'll be interesting to see what the Hawks actually do around the trade deadline. I don't expect them to actually do much, if anything, but hey, you just never know. 2015 reminds me of an insane deadline day as such, with like, you know, stuff like the likes of Dragic moving, Michael Carter-Williams, Brandon Knight. These were like, I think it was like a fifth or something that all the point guards moved teams in the space of a few days, or one day. It was Isaiah Thomas, of course, also went to Boston that day. So yeah, anything could still happen. That's kind of all the news as such. It's not been too heavy in news, really. So we'll kind of get to some game talk now. We'll start very briefly with last Saturday's win against the Magic. This is the beginning of the Hawks' 3-game homestand that they played this week. They kicked it off against the Magic with a 113-86 victory. Tim Hardaway Jr. kind of just continuing where he left off in Houston that Thursday night. He scored 21 points, tied a game high with Paul Millsap. I think 9 of those came in the first quarter. This is a wire-to-wire win for the Hawks. They weren't really in danger. They took a 26-point lead by the end of the first half. Magic kind of made things a little bit interesting there. The Hawks kind of started off slow in a 9-2 run to begin the third quarter for the Magic, kind of forced Bud into a timeout. And from that point, and you know, the Hawks never really looked like they were going to really lose that lead as such. The Magic never really threatened. The one player that you thought might go off, Evan Fournier, he struggled in this game, couldn't really get anything going. He scored 9 points in the end, which is disappointing for them. Yeah, no one really played well for the Magic because they were very, very poor defensively. There's not a whole lot else to say about this game, really. The Hawks shot 52% while holding the Magic to 34.6%. So Hawks played pretty decent defense, but I wouldn't exactly call the Magic an offensive juggernaut that you really had to do a lot to really stop as such. But hey, maybe that's maybe some of the other stats. The Hawks registered 28 assists. Bob was moving quite nicely in this game, and particularly in that one play in the third quarter. I think where all five players touched it. Probably in, you know, that was your typical Bud movement kind of play. It was definitely the best of the season, that's for sure. A lot of players talked about it after the game. Bud talked about it after the game. You know, that's what they really need. They need to do more of that. I don't see that enough. The ball has been sticking a little bit more these days, this season, the Hawks, than years prior. I believe that's personnel related rather than coaching related. But yeah, that needs to happen more often, I think. But, you know, so the coaches, come on, drill it into them. Get Dennis Schroeder to move the ball a little bit more. Get Dwight to move it a little bit more. Just get everyone to move it a bit more, you know? Because those plays really have been, they have been few and far between this season in many ways. And they need to get back to that. They'll really stretch teams. And, you know, Kent Bazemore has been a big big preacher of that as such. Kind of when we move the ball like that, you know, we're a very hard team to beat. And it's true, but they have to do it. That's the thing, they have to do it. And they're well capable of doing it. So just keep at it. Is there anything else interesting from this game? Oh yeah, down, of course, this seems like a lifetime ago at this stage. I don't mean to bring it up. But of course, you had the Matt Ryan chance. MVP, he was announced as MVP during the fourth quarter of the Magic game, because it was good, because there wasn't really anything else interesting going on in this game at that time. So we got a bit of spice. And yeah, so that was fun. It was a real celebration kind of atmosphere. You know, it was kind of, everyone was excited for the Super Bowl. It seemed like a really good vibe going on in Phillips Arena that day against the Magic. And of course, they blew out the Magic. So, you know, not much else to say about this game. You know, Magic, meh. And the Hawks just did what they have to do, really. They just picked up the win, as they should have. Moving on to Monday's game against the Jazz. Oh, good Lord. I don't want to spend too long on this. So what was a wire-to-wire win against the Magic was followed up by a wire-to-wire loss against the Jazz. Hawks were a little bit sluggish. I think a lot of that has to do with quite a number of the rotation players and starters, for that matter. It was Schroeder, Tim Hardaway Jr., Paul Millsap, and Dwight Howard. Oh, and Mike Scott, I suppose, as well. They all were in Houston the night before this to watch the Super Bowl. I imagine they got back quite late. And I think that correlates a little bit with their slow start. Jazz got off to a 10-2 start here. And never really looked back. They were just a combination of kind of sluggishness from the Hawks, and just the Jazz are just a much better basketball team, I think, than the Hawks are. They match up much better against the Hawks. They're just a damn good team, the Jazz. They'll make some noise in the playoffs, I think. You can be sure of that. But unfortunately for the Hawks, you know, they were down 17 in the second quarter. Did a great job fighting back. They cut it to 2 points before taking it. They were trailing by 4 heading into the locker room at the half, but a 37 third quarter for the Jazz, outscoring the Hawks by 14, just took them away. Derek Favors just kind of went off at the end there. I think he's made 3 field goals in a row there to end the third quarter and just really put a damp in the Hawks heading into the fourth. They left them with a lot of work to do. Malcolm Delaney decided to take matters into his own hands at the beginning of the fourth and hit some great shots in a row. Unfortunately, it wasn't really enough to get them over the hump. The Hawks eventually lost this 120-95. Probably should have mentioned that before. Gordon Hayward, fantastic in this game, 30 points. A lot of them coming in the first quarter. Not the best defense played by the Hawks on Hayward. This is where, of course, where they're missing Thabo Sefolosha, who would have checked Hayward. But with no Thabo to check him, He kind of went off there. I don't think it's a coincidence, but hey. Anything good for the Hawks? Yeah, Dennis Schröder had 21 points, but he had 2 assists and 4 turnovers. Not a very good game for Dennis in that sense. Paul Millsap also struggled. 14 points on 4 of 14 shooting. Got a few from the line there, but yeah. There's nothing to say here, really. Jazz shot 61% from the field, and Bud was not too happy about that post game. Just simply not good enough. And you know he's right. There's nothing you can really say here. They're just a better team, the Jazz. And yeah, just a not a pretty game for the Hawks all around. And finally, the last game the Hawks played this week was on Wednesday. Well, this week, Friday. It's Friday afternoon here, before the Kings game. They played the Nuggets there on Wednesday. So a wire-to-wire win followed by a wire-to-wire loss, followed by another wire-to-wire win. They won this one 117 to 106. This seems weird. How do you figure out this team? They're so strange. They started off this game much better, the Hawks did. Put some energy, put some zest into it. Kent Bazemore in particular had it going early. Though he had foul trouble, which kind of makes you wonder how many points could he have scored in this game had he just kind of kept himself together and not fouled as much. But he did score 14 points in 21 minutes. It was a good game for him. Dennis Schröder coming up with the double-double, 24 points and 10 assists. Much better game for him. And kind of took advantage of Jameer Nelson in many ways. Nelson, because no Moutier for the Nuggets, no Gallinari for the Nuggets. But Jameer Nelson, yeah, it's going to struggle a little bit trying to keep Schröder in front of him. The Hawks scored 39 first quarter points. That's the most they scored in the first quarter since, I think it's 2014. So it's going back a good bit. And then they scored 33 points in the second quarter to combine for a 72 point first half. That's a season high. And you know, the Nuggets, though, they were still kind of in this game a little bit, and then the Hawks kind of, you know, took a 20-point lead in the third quarter and seemed to take their foot off the pedal a little bit, and then allowed the Nuggets kind of back in this game in the fourth. They made a run, a few threes involved in there, but I think it was just more so the Hawks kind of just took their foot off the gas and let them back in the game here a little bit. There was a big part of this game, big moment, was the Nuggets had cut the lead to 4 and they had possession of the ball, and Gary Harris missed a 3 would have cut the lead to just 1 point in the fourth quarter. I think it's just under 3 minutes remaining in the game. But that misses, and then Paul Millsap just goes down the other end, scores an and one, and the Hawks end the game on an 8-1 run. Just to finish this game, just they really clamped down the defensive end, and they just got things done. But just players, I think, frustrated after the game. I think Millsap in particular, just that they just let them back in the game. They didn't finish them off the way they should have. And Bazemore was kind of saying we put together 3 good quarters, so you can, yeah, I don't know what it is with this team. Either they start off really slow or they blow teams out and then just let them back into the game. So yeah, if you can tell me what the crack is with this team, please tell me, because I don't know, I can't figure them out at this stage. But hey, if you can, other than themselves. Anything else interesting from this game? Not really. The one thing I would say from the Nuggets is they did a good job attacking the glass. 21 offensive rebounds for 20 second chance points. Even though Dwight Howard was obviously a part of this game, Nikola Jokic in particular caused a few issues on that end. I think he had 15 rebounds in total. I think he had 6 or 7 by the end of the first quarter. He was doing work. But the Hawks did a decent job kind of marshalling him. I think he only 3 assists in the end. It was Wilson Chandler that caused the most problem for the Hawks. And I would say, I do think part of him going off was a little bit to do with Sefolosha not playing. Because Chandler would start a small forward with Kenneth Faried at power forward and Jokic at centre. But then Kenneth Faried went down injured. And played just 9 minutes and had to leave on crutches. I believe he rolled his ankle there. So Chandler kind of moved to the 4. So it was more so Paul Millsap's man as such, rather than, say, Bazemore's or Hardaway's or Bembry, whoever it was, guarding him. That's a tough cover for Bazemore, I think, because not sure how tall Chandler is, but he's not small, that's for sure. He's definitely taller than Bazemore. But even still saying that, probably a better matchup than Gallinari, who's flipping 6'10 and plays small forward at times. But yeah, nothing else to say really here. Hawks, I think six players scored in double digits in the end. All five starters. Maybe it was seven, actually. Seven, because Bembry and Muscala both scored 10 off the bench. And Bembry, I think, had a very good game. I kind of covered that in my recap of this game. You can check that out. I went through some footage of Ben. Just little things. The little things that Bembry has been doing that are probably the reason why he's in the rotation still, even after this time. So, yeah, decent win here. Again, a game the Hawks should have won, and just a matter of them taking care of business. And that's exactly what they did. All right, so we'll just take a quick look over the stats of the last five games for the Hawks and kind of where they rank in the league in the last five games in the stats. So they finished with a 3-2 record, scoring 106.2 points per game. It's 16th in the league. 47.8% shooting from the field, which is 8th. That's pretty good. That's a good shooting percentage from the field. This is not, however, 30.5% shooting from 3. That's 29th in the league over the last 5 games. The free throw percentage is 77.7%. That's good enough for 13th. And that's a decent number for the Hawks, you know, consider that, you know, Paul Millsap can miss a few here and there, and obviously Dwight can miss a few, and Tim Hardaway Jr. has missed quite a few as well. So that's pretty decent in that sense. Hawks are averaging 45 rebounds. It's 12th in the league. This is the disappointing one, I think. 22.8 assists, which is 15th in the league over the last 5 games. You'd expect that number to be higher than it is. I know that kind of was an issue against the Jazz. You know, the Hawks only registered 16 assists. And not a good night in that sense. And not a great 5-game stretch in the assist department. 7.6 steals per game. It's tied for 15th. 4 blocks a game. It's tied for 20th. An offensive rating of 103.2. That's 25th in the league over the last 5 games. A defensive rating of 103.4. That's 5th in the league. A net rating of minus 0.2, which is 14th best in the league over the last 5 games. And a plus-minus rating of minus 1, which is 17th in the league. Again, all those are stats from the last 5 games. Not a league-wide sample for the whole season, just over the last 5 games. It's always important to stress. At this point, I normally look at kind of who's been playing well over the last 5 games, and only one player kind of stands out here. That's Tim Hardaway Jr. Over his last 5, he's averaging 18.4 points per game, 49.2% shooting from the field, 41.4% from 3, 4 rebounds, 3.2 assists, and a plus-minus rating of plus 4.6. So a good week for Hardaway in that sense. No one else kind of had a great week, but no one really had a bad week either. I guess you could say that Bembry has had a good week, more so because that he's actually playing games. I think he's averaging 6 points per game. Let me just check that right quick. Over these last 5 games, 6 points per game on 50% shooting, 20.4 minutes per game, and he's played all 5 games, of course, over these last 5. So Bembry's had a very good stretch here, and he's played well. You know, he has played well. You know, makes a few rookie mistakes here and there, but what rookie doesn't, really? I wonder if LeBron made many rookie mistakes when he was a rookie. That would be fascinating to see. I don't know how easy tape of 2003 is to dig up, but that would be interesting to see. Let's get to the interesting part. I asked for some Twitter questions over the last day or two. And we have a few. First one that I'm going to read comes from... from Thomas Jenkins, writer of Peachtree Hoops. Shout out to Thomas, I like your stuff. I think we think very similarly about the Hawks and basketball. But his question is, where will the Hawks finish in the East? And let me just bring up the standings right quick, because this is a very interesting question, because there's quite a few teams in the mix here. So you look at the current standings. Of course, today is Friday, the 10th. The Hawks are 5th in the East with a 31-22 record. They are half a game back of the Raptors, and they are also half a game back of the Wizards, while just a game and a half ahead of the Pacers there in seventh, or in sixth. I'm not really looking at the Raptors in this sense, because I think the Raptors will eventually go back to where they belong as such, two, if not three seed. I personally believe they're a two seed. I'm not so much looking at the Celtics as much. I think they're a fairly clear three seed. So I'm looking at the Wizards and the Pacers. The way the Pacers have been playing of late, it is conceivable that they could catch the Hawks here. I'm also looking at the Wizards, and I think just with how they've kind of figured things out, I believe they're kind of ahead of the Hawks in that sense. I would definitely take them in the 7-game playoff series right now. So I think the Wizards will ultimately finish fourth. I think the Hawks are good enough to stay above the Pacers, but I think it'll be quite close between those two. So I'll say the Hawks will finish fifth, but I think it will be close between them, the Pacers, and the Wizards. Again, I expect the Raptors to kind of figure stuff out again, and they'll kind of return to where they belong. I do think the Hawks can play a lot better than they have of late, I'm spending way too long on this. I'm going to say fifth. I'm going to say the Hawks will finish fifth in the East, just ahead of the Pacers there. Next question from Robert, Hawks fanatic on Twitter. Shout out to Robert, salary cap CBA guru, who I've gone to a few times for CBA related stuff. Thank you, Robert. I felt really, really stupid calling you Robert the whole time when people call you Bob, but I know we've addressed this on Twitter already. But anyway, his question is, how long until Splitter works? You can answer for either. There's a few ways of looking at this. So you could say, how long until Splitter works? As in, when is he going back to work? How long until he works, as in when is his flipping body work? Those are the two ways I'm going to interpret this question. And gosh, I'm this close to saying that he's not going to come back. I'm that close to saying, but I'm going to go with March. I don't think he's going to be back until March, at least. Bud mentioned that he's been doing more in practices and stuff, but he says he's still not sure when he's coming back. So I'll just read that quote again. He's doing more in the shoot-arounds and more in practices. I don't know that I'd necessarily take it and say he's getting closer, but he's doing more. Like, how can you say he's not getting necessarily getting closer after all this time? I don't know. It's just not good. So I would tempted to say he's not coming back at all, but I will say that he'll be back in March. I'm going to say mid-March. Give myself a little bit of a margin here. But will he actually work? I don't think so. I think it's too far. If he does come back in March, it'd be just kind of too far to implement him in the rotation, especially when you've got all, you know, it looks like the Hawks will be involved in very tense playoff races for seeding. It's going to be hard to implement. You're almost implementing a brand new player into the system as such on the court. Obviously, he's kind of familiar with how things work on the butt at this stage, but to actually just get him out there, kind of get the on-court chemistry in games, I don't know. I almost think he won't play. My good friend Matt asks, what piece, red player, do the Hawks need to add to compete with the Cavs this year? This is what they had in mind when they added Dwight, was that they kind of would match up better against the Cavs. And in terms of rebounding, which I think they did in their first game, obviously the Cavs are the 1 seed for a reason. The Hawks are a 5 seed for the reason. I would look at it as what piece and what kind of gettable piece. I don't think there's a gettable piece out there that the Hawks could add to actually compete with the Cavs. Obviously the Cavs pay a lot of luxury tax for a reason. You know, the Hawks do not pay luxury tax as such. And, you know, when you're paying luxury tax, you're going to have a better team in a sense. And I know that's not necessarily always true, because you look at the Blazers next season, they look to be in a luxury tax area, and they don't exactly have a most fantastic team. But with the Cavs, you know, you look at their personnel, they're very deep. You know, they go at least 8 or 9 deep even with J.R. Smith out, you know, it's tough. The one thing I would say for them is if they can get a wing and like a starting caliber shooting guard, I'll say a shooting guard that can hit a very good percentage of threes and play defense, I think would give them a much better shot at competing with the Cavs. And you know, I think he uses the word compete. That's a much better word to use rather than to beat, because I think we don't think the Hawks can beat the Cavs, but I think they could compete, maybe win a game or two. But I would say a small a shooting guard, maybe someone like a JJ Redick or Danny Green, that kind of player who can, you know, your classic 3-and-D kind of player. That would help them compete. Like, so I would ideally I would like Schroeder or someone like Danny Green. Again, I'm not saying that someone of that kind of ilk, Sefolosha, Millsap, Howard to start games. I'd prefer Baze in a perfect world. I'd prefer Bazemore to come off the bench, but hey, that's not going to happen now at this stage. But yeah, I'll say a shooting guard that can play 3-and-D, I think would definitely help the Hawks, because they're not great in shooting. Even though Tim Hardaway Jr. has kind of stepped up since Korver has been traded, the Hawks are still not a great shooting team. You need only look at their shooting percentage over the last five games to kind of point you in that direction. I was bottom of the league in the last five games in 3-point percentage. So I would say a 3-point shooter that can play defense as well would really help them do a better job of competing. But it'll be interesting because the Hawks have at least two games coming up against the Cavs before this season ends, and we'll really see kind of how they match up against them in that sense. Kind of, not that they'll, I think it's because it's after the deadline as well. So not that they'll be able to actually add anything to help, but we'll have a decent idea of kind of where they're at against the Cavs. But I would say a shooting guard that can play defense. And lastly, not really a question, but Dan, his name's Dan on Twitter. I would say your second name, but I don't want to butcher it. But he says, not sure if you want to address this in the podcast, but massive price increases for season ticket holders next season. So you know, kind of asked him a few questions about it. He said he was told by his rep, increases higher than 40% in several 100 and 200 sections are coming, running people out of their seats. This is very interesting because, and you know, I'm going to direct my attention to a Chris Vivlamore piece from the AJC. We kind of did a brief story on this back on the 3rd of February, going back last, I suppose last Friday would be, kind of talking about it. I'm going to read a few little bits from it. While some ticket prices will not be increased, some will see a small percentage and some a substantial percentage increase. Hawks CEO Steve Coonan said most increases are less than 10%. So I'm going to quote Coonan. On average, we have modest price increases in single digits. It's a fact that some seats are going up, but in pure dollars, a lot of these are less than $10. Overall, we wanted modest price increases. Livermore says one longtime season ticket holder in section 122 has been told of a 41% increase by a Hawks ticket rep. Let's read a little bit more. According to the team marketing report, with numbers based on the 2015-16 season, the Hawks had the fifth lowest average price ticket at $36.82. The Knicks had the highest average ticket price with $129.38. So you can kind of see the comparison. Coonan said the pricing, ticket pricing at Phillips is a complex with a number of different levels and pricing histories. Okay, so that's basically all the you need to read from that as such. It's very interesting that it seems like some areas are not going up as much, others are going up dramatically. I think this is obviously due to the to help fund the arena renovations that are taking place at Phillips over the next few summers. But I think this is a big reason why the Hawks, because remember when Millsap was on the trading block as such, or the Hawks were taking calls for him. When he was reported that he was taken off the trading block as such, Chris Livermore at the time reported that the new mandate may have come from Hawks ownership. And if you're trying to sell tickets and kind of help fund the arena renovations, you can't be going through a rebuild. It's the same with the Sacramento Kings in when they moved to Golden 1 Center. Like, how can you trade Boogie Cousins? What do you have to sell moving into your new center? You know, at least with Boogie, you've got a franchise player and an all-NBA player. to watch every single night in your new arena, you know, that will sell tickets. But if you're in a rebuild, especially with the Hawks, you know, they don't have the, you know, attendance isn't always the best, to put it that way. So, but kind of imagine how it would be if during a rebuild, if you don't have like a Dwight Howard, Paul Millsap, or a team making the playoffs, that won't be any good to anyone in the Hawks ownership trying to fund arena renovations and also other things that they're trying to do as well. So I think this has a huge reason to do with why the Hawks kind of took Millsap off the block. All this has been in mind, I think, with finances and tickets and that kind of thing, and renovations and other things the Hawks are trying to do that involve money. And of course, money has to come somewhere. And the most obvious thing to increase, of course, would be the tickets. Supposedly, the tickets actually went down in price after the whole Danny Ferry. Yeah, so Viv Lemire mentions here, some prices were decreased after the racial issues that faced the franchise in 2014. So obviously, going back to the whole Danny Ferry, Luol Deng thing. So, I mean, yeah, it's very interesting. I wish there was more kind of focus on it. There's, you know, someone did a little bit more digging into it as such, but we just don't have that information at the moment. But I think definitely it's linked to this whole ticket price increase. And 41% is a massive, massive, massive increase. I think it's all linked to the ticket. So ticket prices going up to help fund the arena renovations. And that's why Paul Millsap and the Hawks aren't headed for a trade / rebuild, because the Hawks need to sell tickets. And it's going to be much more difficult to sell tickets if you're in a rebuilding phase. So unfortunately, it seems like ownership has kind of, and there's no, this is, I'm not taking any of this as fact as such. You can if you want. In my mind, I probably will, but I'm not kind of stating it as fact. You know, you shouldn't assume as such either. This is just an opinion, but that it all kind of makes sense to me in that sense. So it seems unfortunately that ownership has kind of stepped in, and for financial reasons, more so than basketball reasons, has kind of prevented the Hawks from kind of maybe moving into a new direction. And at this stage, it's too late. You know, I think it's a month ago when you traded Korver, you could have easily, the time was then to make moves and trade Millsap and, you know, in a sense, quote, blow this thing up. But now, you know, you've come, because I think at the time, there were only 5.5 games ahead of the Magic at that time. The Magic were like 10th or 11th or 12th in the conference. Now it's way too late. In a sense, you have kind of owed to yourself to kind of see this season out with this group. You're in a very decent position in the conference. You've got a very decent record, and it's just you've come too far at this point to say we're trading Millsap now. So it's too late for that now, I think. And we'll see what happens in coming into the deadline, and I suppose in June. Just now looking at the schedule for the next three games, the last three games of the All-Star before the All-Star break. It's a three-game Western Conference road trip. First of all, starting tonight against the Kings at the Golden 1 Center. Unfortunately, the Hawks will be facing a fully rested Boogie Cousins, who was suspended on Wednesday in a win against the Celtics. So at least they got the win against the Celtics in that sense. But unfortunately, Boogie is back and healthy. I'm sure he's pissed off. So I'm sure the Hawks can expect a nice 36-15 rebound game or so from Boogie tonight. Road trip continues then on Monday to the Blazers. They've dropped off a bit from last season, but you know, with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, if there's no Thabo Sefolosha, the Hawks are going to be in trouble here, because I imagine Thabo would have checked CJ McCollum at least. So that'll be interesting to see. And on Wednesday, the last game before the All-Star break is against the Clippers at the Staples Center. Still no Chris Paul, but Blake Griffin is back this time for the Clippers. The Hawks actually won a very entertaining game last year against the Clippers in their building. It'll be interesting to see how they get on this season. That's a very, you know, it's very important the Hawks end this little period before the All-Star break the right way. At least win two of those games. You know, two of those teams are below 500. Let me just check for the Blazers. Yeah, Blazers are 23-31. And the Kings are 21-32. So they're very close. Both teams have a lot to play for, because they're not far off at all in terms of the 8th seed. The Hawks should get at least two of these wins. These are very important games. You know, you don't want to lose too many games here. you know, because the Pacers are right in touch, the Raptors are right there, the Wizards are right there, the Celtics are right there to an extent as well. You don't want to lose a whole lot of ground here. The Clippers game, you could probably be forgiven if you lose, but you know, if you lose the Kings and the Blazers as well, you know, they really need to end this the right way. But that'll be it for this week. I'll probably touch base again on maybe Wednesday or Thursday, or probably Thursday, after the Hawks finish up for the All-Star break. So that will kind of do it for today. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for the questions. If you have any more, you know, keep them coming. I'll always just tweet me. We've got some good stuff on the site at hawkshoop.com. Eric Yeboah and Avery Yang and myself will be doing stuff. And shout out, of course, to Bo Cherney. Heading all that, we got some good stuff. And again, we'll have some more good stuff before the end of the All-Star break. Anyways, yeah, we're done here. Thank you and good night.